This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Wild and dangerous weather, melting ice caps and glaciers, new heat records and acid seas, nothing persuades the small army of climate science deniers. They are contrarians, aging academics, right-wing politicians, lonely trolls, and front group institutes with a post office box and a carefully hidden stream of money coming from big oil and coal. Dr. John Mashey, a California computer scientist, has tracked them down. You're about to hear his talk, The Machinery of Climate Anti-Science. I recorded it in Vancouver, Canada on April 7th, 2011. You can find a PDF document with his notes and all the graphs at the website for the Pacific Institute for Climate Solutions, or link directly from my show blog at ecoshock.info. Dr. Mashey was a longtime computer guru working at Bell Labs and then as chief scientist for the supercomputer company Silicon Graphics. There he met the climate scientists who needed the fastest machines in the world. Mashey was outraged to find those same scientists faced death threats, harassment at work, and odd legal wrangling. The U.S. Congress was misled by plagiarism in a university academic report. One climate scientist is suing for libel and winning. Mashey set out to find out who was behind these attacks and who paid for them. Put on your smog glasses. We're going on an expedition through fake institutes, the same PR companies who protected big tobacco, using some of the same bought-out expertise, right up through the clouds of lobby institutes claiming to be nonprofits, to the billionaire fossil fuel men in the sky. Here is Dr. John Mashey.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks for all you coming out here. The idea here on the front is that there's a machine over here which does its best to hide how it works, but its job is to generate confusion over the science. The idea is to obscure the science. It's oddly inherited from the tobacco wars in a very direct way for odd reasons. And in particular, what they obscure the most is the funding. The funding here, I'm only a little ways into it. It is one of the most convoluted money laundering schemes I've ever heard of. It's very cleverly done. It's very hard to find. I spent a lot of time tracking money around. You can find maybe 20 to 50% of the money flows, and what you find is already indicative, but there's a lot more sloshing around, and that is very craftily hidden. So the PDF of this thing will be posted at the PIX website, and I thank them very much for organizing this trip. At SGI, the marketing folks used to complain at me that I had more diagrams and stuff on my slides. I said, yes, and those are the most requested slide sets in Silicon Graphics, and they stopped bothering me then. I'm going to give a little more background. This is how a poor computer scientist slash executive, because really I'm also a business executive, sort of stumbles into this weird alternate universe where physics doesn't work. Right? I used to be studying to be a physicist, and stuff that I learned as a sophomore somehow in this alternate universe of anti-science doesn't work, okay, at all, right? That's curious, right? So I started helping out and sort of started studying the machinery, and I'll explain that. You have to understand, this is more like military intelligence or studying mobs, investigative reporting, where people are hiding things on purpose. And so you have to work hard to figure out what's happening. It's not like science, you know. There's lots of complicated science questions, but the universe doesn't try to hide from you. Right, or fool you, you know? Universe doesn't lie. Some people lie. So from December 2009 to current, I want to give an example of the working of the machinery's gears. And it's particularly appropriate that these talks be given first in British Columbia, because not only have the folks at DeSmog Blog, which is Vancouver-based, helped me out a lot with publishing stuff, but a person who goes under the name Deep Climate has been British Columbia based. He found a little problem with this 2006 Wegman report. And how many people have heard of the Wegman report? Some of you. Okay, I'll explain more what that is. It's something that's not cited in science because it isn't, but it's cited by every climate anti-science book as the proof that global warming isn't happening. What happened is he found a couple small problems. If people remember the original Watergate that started with a burglary that had nothing to do with Richard Nixon, this is like that, okay? This is a few pages of plagiarism, and then it got more and more and more and more, and other helpers, it's been interesting. So there's all kinds of things already out of this. There are academic misconduct complaints. There were articles in USA Today. There will be more. There will probably be funds misuse cases, okay, that will come up in misuse of federal funds. There may even, if I can get them to happen, be felony charges, because it is a felony to mislead the U.S. Congress. All of this is in service of looking for actionable problems, not just that somebody says something crazy. At the tail end, I'll talk about defogging or desmogging the machine and throwing rocks in the gears. My motivation for this is I have a bunch of climate scientist friends who've become friends. I went to a luncheon one time where 4 out of the 5 people at lunch get death threats regularly because of research they do for people's grandchildren. It gets me mad, right? Also, when I was designing and helping sell supercomputers, I often talked to climate modelers. And that was really interesting because they always wanted bigger computers to make better models. And we talked about what science they needed to know and, you know, where bigger computers could help them and where they couldn't. Anyway, it was very, very useful. But then I got sucked into this weird climate stuff. And so this is the more relevant piece for this. I started following blogs and things and websites, and I got curious, why were so many people certain that the scientific consensus was all wrong? And I went down all the arguments against global warming, and, you know, I'm a skeptical guy by nature. Here would be an argument. It might look good on a website. I'd go research it, and I'd cross them off. And through 2005, they all got crossed off except for one thing, and that was the fact that the satellites disagreed with the ground stations. Well, in 2005, they found bugs in the programs that were making it look like it was getting cooler with the satellites. Turned out there was, you know, there was something where they added something rather than subtracting, and it reversed things. And all of a sudden, things agreed. Well, this is how a real skeptical person does stuff, is you look at the issues and you study them and you see whether they stand up. They didn't stand up. So I wonder, why is this? Is this bad communication by scientists? Are they not doing a good job? Or maybe journalists aren't doing it right, or is it something else? Well, 2007, this lady up here, Naomi Oreskes, came and talked at Stanford, and I'm within bicycle distance of Stanford, so I go there a lot. And she impressed me. She described how she wrote a paper for Science in 2004, short one, about consensus about climate, and then started getting hate mail and nasty phone calls in the middle of the night and stuff like that. Right? Now, Naomi's become a very good friend of ours, and she is not a person you want to do that with. Okay, she's smart, highly respected, and she's a geoscientist turned science historian. Now, you can attack climate scientists because they want to study climate science and get science done. Historians may turn around and study you. Bad target. All right, this fellow is the Viscount Christopher Monckton. How many people have ever heard of him? Oh, lots of you. Oh, goody, okay. How many people have ever seen Monty Python Upper Class Twit Race? Yes, okay. There are some similarities, okay? Okay, so he and a fellow named Schulte mounted an attack on Naomi. They wrote nasty letters to her and her chancellor demanding resignation and or apologies. And just by coincidence, they put it out on Business Wire the same day. Oh, that's how you settle academic disputes. You put it out on Business Wire. Well, that makes sense, right? And this SPPI is the Science and Public Policy Institute. Science and Public Policy Institute, that sounds like a good thing. Well, it doesn't do science. It's not an institute. It is certainly not for the public. It would like to affect policy. It's actually one guy whose address is a post office box and a UPS store. But it sounds pretty good, right? It's sort of Monckton's home away from home. Well, the kind folks at DSmug Blog published the study I did on this. Then Moncton somehow got an article into a newsletter for the American Physical Society. That was a sort of funny mess. I sort of helped fix that up. Then a bit later, there was a petition to that same society by, how many people recognize the name Fred Singer? Yes, okay, he's not a nice guy. Will Happer is also not one. I'm on their bad list, too. And I wrote up how this petition worked, and they were not very happy. Then ClimateGate happened, and I was helping Mike Mann, people know that name, with Penn State. I'm an old Penn Stater, and I still know a lot of people. So Penn State's a very good school. I knew they would handle it okay, but they are not used to these weird extra science attacks that are PR efforts, right? So I was trying to educate them about how this stuff worked. Deep climate set us all off on a very strange journey that I never expected. He found a couple pages of plagiarism in the Wegman report, and then more came out and more came out. The reason for doing it was to document all this stuff, because this is more like a criminal investigation. Sometimes connections that aren't obvious get, you know, happen later. You realize that some data you had actually means something. Okay, so let's just start with the attacks. Here was this attack on Naomi. This was this new think tank with big involvement from Moncton. He may well be funding it. I can't tell that yet. A lot of debunking went on at the Deltoid blog, which is Australian. Now, this whole thing is international. A lot of the attacks started in Canada, actually. But it's a very international thing on both sides. So, attack UK-US, a debunk coming organized in Australia, but with help from other people. This gave me ideas about social networks of climate anti-science. Here's what happened. When I looked at this SPPI thing, it had a bunch of advisors from all around the world. Here's one from the UK, a couple from Australia, rest from the US. And when I looked up these people, they were also advisors or something at a whole bunch of other places. And I said, wait a minute. All of these things have a list of who are advisors. There really aren't that many people. They're just all over the place, you know? And you would find people who were advisors at 8 or 10 different places. So I started keeping lists. And every time I saw a new petition or somebody talking at an anti-science conference, I stuck them on the list. I kept track of activities. I built up a giant spreadsheet because you couldn't tell what was happening. I'm a scientist. I gather data. Okay, this was this silly thing with the... it's an example where some naive editors ended up asking Moncton for a physics article. Those of you who know about Moncton know this is pretty silly. But it happened through a bunch of silly accidents. Well, it got wiped out pretty quick. There was, once again, DSmug blog had some good stuff. Australia had some good stuff. Canada had some good stuff. It did show that even a few physicists can ignore physics. Science societies are pretty good at the top once they know there's a problem, and they acted very quickly. It sort of helped that a guy I knew was a Nobel physicist, and I told him about this, and half an hour later, he fired off a blowtorch to folks. And having a Nobel physicist tell you that you've really screwed up, you know, gets attention. There can be vulnerabilities here. Like this guy here, Larry Gould, he's a newsletter editor for the New England section, and he's become a big Moncton fan. He invited Moncton to talk at his school. You know, he promotes him on his webpage. If you go look at this thing finally, you should look at this webpage. It's in a different universe, whatever it is, okay? Now, however, this stuff is confusing. I thought he was the guy who really fired this up. Turned out it was somebody else who gave Moncton's name to these editors. In fact, he gave 6 people's names, of whom they knew 5. They all said no to write the opposing global warming side of a pair of articles. They wrote a letter or email to Moncton addressing him as Dr. Moncton. He has a classics degree. Moncton somehow never managed to correct their misimpression. Supplied him this article, and it was bad. Well, we got rid of that, but I warned the poor editors. I said, you are now about to be subject to having a toothless chihuahua barking away, gumming your ankle for a long time. And they did. Monckton claimed it was peer-reviewed. No, it wasn't. Okay. Monckton wrote letters saying how evil and bad the APS was. It did all kinds of stuff. All this propagated through the blogosphere. It was just truly amazing. Monckton appeared on DSmog blog and said, I was under investigation. He quoted Dr. Massey all over the place, which is sort of funny, and he said, Dr. Massey should publish peer-reviewed stuff rather than unlawfully interfering with the blogosphere. Now, this is a crime I haven't known about, okay? How do you interfere unlawfully with the blogosphere? This is like interfering with chaos. I mean, so there was a period when I was number one on Monckton's bad list. Fortunately, other people have gotten above me by now. Then there was this petition. Now, this was funny. This was some fairly well-known physicists like Fred Singer and Will Happer. They wanted to change the climate position from a normal, yes, it's a serious problem, to no, nothing's happening, and it's all natural variation, and even if it is warming, it doesn't really matter, it's okay. You know, it was one of these vague kind of things. This was an unusual petition because most of the people actually could be found. You could tell who they really were. And not only that, because they're publishing scientists, or were, you could find out who they worked with. And they came in waves. Well, what this let me do, this was sort of the waves of growth of this thing. In about 6 or 7 months, they got 206 people to sign this out of the 45,000 that are APS members. So that's less than 0.5%. Anyway, the result was, is I was able to go in and look at the social networks of how this was really spread.
You are listening to a presentation by Dr. John Massey. It's called The Machinery of Climate Anti-Science, right here on Radio EcoShock.
Are people familiar with the term AstroTurf? AstroTurf is artificial turf, but it also means you're trying to fake something that looks like a grassroots effort from the bottom up, but it's really heavily organized or driven by some small group. So that's an AstroTurf group. So this was supposed to be a petition of the membership. Well, it was a petition of Fred Singer and his friends and his friends, and you could see the layers come. So that was interesting. The demographics were quite instructive. The age distribution, this is the approximate age distribution if this group were taken from APS membership itself. This was the age distribution of the signers. That is, almost half of the people were emeritus or retired. Now, I know a lot of emeritus scientists who are sharp, sane, still contributing, still helping students, but some go emeritus in the bad way, over the edge. And these are physicists who basically, in effect, say conservation of energy doesn't work. I mean, that's what it comes to. Like, well, okay, I thought that was the law. The next thing was they were heavily skewed in political donations, 16-1 on the conservative side. Gender, this one isn't significant, but it's very heavily male. It turns out lots of the anti-science stuff is done by males, very few by females. The reason it's not significant is there just aren't enough older female physicists in this sample to know. There's only a few of them, so you can't really tell. Geographic clustering, it was real obvious that these things were clusters around the key people that organized this thing, right? There were a whole bunch at Los Alamos Labs, you know, where they did nuclear bomb stuff. There was a whole bunch of Southern California aerospace folks. There's a bunch in Virginia. There's a whole bunch around that guy Larry Gould in Connecticut. And the geographic clustering was clear. Bottom line here was ideology can nullify laws of physics. You may not have known that, you know? Strong belief, laws of physics out the door. Okay, so now let me go to some definitions and talk about cigarettes, which turned out to be incredibly important to this. So science, people kind of know what science is. You actually gather evidence and make hypotheses and prove them or disprove them. You could argue fiercely, but it's on evidence. Yes, personalities matter sometimes. That gets washed out. I wrote this thing called How to Learn About Science. The Great Wall analogy was the idea that science isn't built from plans, it's accumulated brick by brick. You're not sure where it's going to go, but once you've built the Great Wall, just because a brick gets a little loose doesn't mean the whole wall falls down. Some people seem to think that if they can find one paper that disagrees with global warming, it'll all disappear. And every month we see yet another paper that turns out to be wrong that makes it disappear. Pseudoscience. This is where you try to convince scientists of weird ideas even though the evidence is piled up otherwise. So ESP astrology is a guy who really believes the sun is made of iron. And any blog, this guy will show up and talk about the sun being iron. And by the way, global warming is wrong, okay? And if you really want to see great examples, there's what I call the dog astrology journal, called the Journal of Scientific Exploration. This has actually been quoted as a crucial source by the Canadians, McIntyre and McKittrick, and the guy who wrote the book called The Hockey Stick Illusion. They actually quote this journal, which they call a dog astrology journal. One of the papers it published was a study of 500 Parisian dogs to compare versus their astrological signs to see if it affected their personalities. And yes, it affected them as much as it affects human personalities. And this was a very serious, technical-looking article. And you may not have known that Parisian puppies have signs, but they do. Ugh, weird, okay? Science noise, you know, science communication isn't easy. Often there's noise. When you go from real science through the media and to the public, there's noise in the signal. And that's just, you know, that's life. I've worked a lot with the press. It's hard to get stuff right, particularly in a small article. Anti-science is something different. This is where you're trying to obscure science to make sure because you don't like the policies that might come from it, and you want to get rid of the possible policies. So this is different. But pseudoscience, you know, has all kinds of ideas, and they're not very organized. Anti-science turns out to be very well organized and very well funded. Here's the idea. Science is done. It accumulates. When the government wants an opinion on things, you put together a review panel of senior scientists. They do an assessment report that looks at a lot of things. In the U.S., that's the National Academy of Sciences. You give this information to the governments and the public. Some argument goes on. You make some decisions. And you get policy, you know, informed by the best science you can have at the time. It may change later, but it's like you do the best estimate. This is what Steve Snyder was great about talking about where there's uncertainty and where there isn't, okay, or how much there is, and the fact that, yes, you don't know everything, but you sometimes know enough that you should be able to make good decisions. Well, some people don't want the actions that might happen here. The goal is to sort of wipe that out, make sure it doesn't happen. The tactic is to throw up a whole lot of fog on top of this and always be saying, well, we need more research. Well, we need more research. Some people have been saying we need more research for 20 years. And you know what? You always do need more research, but that doesn't mean you haven't learned anything yet. Okay, and you just throw the old research in the trash. And there's all kinds of tactics for doing this. Where they came from was the tobacco industry. And I'm sorry, I feel bad as an American, we foisted this on the world. Have people ever heard of the tobacco archives? This came out of the settlement with the tobacco industry in the late 90s, and it basically got all of their internal documents. And believe me, reading this is a real eye-opener. Well, this was a strategy put together by the PR firm Hill & Knowlton for tobacco companies back quite a while ago. They could see the scientific evidence was piling up in a way they didn't like. So here were the tactics. Well, it's still inconclusive. Hey, it may be something other than smoking. You know, you can't trust statistics. It's a scare. It's too complicated, blah, blah, blah. Well, replace smoking by CO2, and it's all the same tactics. Yeah, what's funny is it's often the same think tanks and fronts and people. Because you can go back in to the tobacco archives, you can find a whole bunch of the conservative think tanks who ended up helping the tobacco companies all the time. And what's funny is most of these entities are tax-free nonprofits, even though they are really PR lobbying agencies. And I hope at some point maybe something will happen to that, I hope. Now look. Some think tanks can be legitimate advocates for smaller government, less taxes, less bureaucracy, whatever. Again, some of these other things are really PR agencies for hire that then wrap a mantle of business and small government around them. I've been a business guy. They don't represent me. You know, they just, well, I mean, particularly Is it a conservative value to addict children to nicotine? Because the only way somebody really gets addicted is to start between 12 and 18. The habit has to be established for most people while your brain is still developing. And the tobacco companies have known this forever, or for a long time. There's this great one here called The Importance of Younger Adults. You may not realize that 12 to 18 are younger adults. They know if they don't get them early, they won't. All right. I mean, that's laid out in this document, right? And these think tanks, the same ones that do climate anti-science, were right in there pitching for decades. But it does pay well. So how does the machinery work? Well, let's look at this. This is the tip of the iceberg. It's complicated. If you go read the documents, it's got all the details. The idea is money flows in the top from corporations and especially certain family foundations. And I'll mention a few of the key ones. It goes into this vague cloud of money. It's wonderful money laundering. It's very hard to figure out where the money's going, and because sometimes it goes through two or three separate steps through PR agencies and front organizations and think tanks and just all kinds of stuff, right? That's why all these things go in different directions. The red things are where ideas come from. Memes, that is, wrong ideas or about climate, like global warming stopped in 1998. That'll come out and it'll propagate all the way across the internet and everything just doesn't have to be true. Anyway, these people over here are the spokespeople, tend to generate this stuff. The ideas flow back through the PR agencies and think tanks. They do the publicity. These guys are very good PR folks. If you can help get people's kids addicted to nicotine, confusing people about climate is child's play. Because it's a lot more complicated. So these are some of the best marketeers on the planet, right? And they're good at it. Now, spokespeople, some of them, like Fred Singer, have been doing this for 20 years. Others come and go. They tend to use them up because after a while, people realize that, you know, they keep saying nonsense and they fade out. And so there's a long history of people popping up, being used as a spokesperson, and then they need new faces. The new faces actually shows up in certain documents we've seen, where they say, we need to get new faces, new voices to add to the ones we already have. The media and the internet is another big cloud here, and the public then is sort of split by one of these reports of good analysis, sort of people who know that there is no such thing as climate change and are willing to write letters and post things in the blogs and everything. There are people who are uncommitted and there are people who understand the science or trust science enough that they don't believe it. The clear goal is to move people from uncommitted into completely disbelieving the science. The other goal, of course, as politicians get involved, is maybe you get more votes. It's sad to see the Republican Party and the Tea Party, where apparently in order to even be allowed to exist, you have to sign up saying there's no such thing as global warming. And a whole bunch of politicians who used to be moderates now say, no global warming, I'm sure of it, you know, politician. So let me expand this. Again, here's the big cloud. Sometimes you can find the money, like ExxonMobil Educational Foundation has to report where the money goes. I have no idea why they did it that way, because the amount of money is rounding error in a day's profits. But they did it that way, and you can track it. The family foundations donate to various people, and those things are reported. Down here, you can find out how much money they got, but you don't know where they got it from. You can usually find 20 to 50% of it from these guys up here. The rest of it probably comes directly from corporations or through who knows how much.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. We have more from Dr. John Mashey coming right up. He's the California computer scientist who made a map of anti-science supporters of big oil and coal. It's all on his spreadsheet and lecture notes, available as a free PDF download at the Pacific Institute for Climate Solutions. We'll be right back.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.